Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The floor of the U.S. Senate is center stage in Washington tonight as Democrats and Republicans push toward a long-anticipated vote on the creation of a new Department of Homeland Securities. Security, in many ways, this vote, expected just minutes from now, sometime this evening certainly, is the legislative culmination of America's response to the shock of 9/11. Democrats fought for union protection and lost. Republicans pushed for a raft of controversial provisions benefiting supporters and won. The final vote may come tonight, and with it, the biggest restructuring of the U.S. government in half a century. Tonight, On Point, almost two dozen federal agencies and 170,000 employees headed one under one big tent called Homeland Security. Moments ago, I spoke with Gail Shattuck, congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, who spent the day on the Senate floor. I asked her to describe the mood in the Senate tonight as it heads toward its historic vote.
It is a tremendous victory for President Bush, probably one of the biggest victories in presidential history that's going to be studied for many years. I think mainly because of the way it evolved today. A bill that has actually been debated in hearings for months came down to 486 pages, very quickly pulled together, and basically pushed through without amendment. Extraordinary political achievement.
Did people really believe, when Bush announced after the recent midterm elections that he wanted this done during the lame duck session, that it could happen during a lame duck session?
Frankly, no. Lame duck sessions have been just what the name suggests. They've been nasty, they've been protracted, and they rarely produce anything at all. This really was quite astonishing.
And how much of that goes to arm twisting from the White House? How actively involved has President Bush been?
Very. There were critical phone calls made all the way through this process. I was just speaking with Senator Mitt Nelson from Nebraska, who was one of the key Democrats first in negotiating the deal that broke the deadlock on this over the rights of federal workers, and then in voting down a very important amendment earlier today that would have stripped out what Democrats were calling some special interest provisions. Senator Nelson said that it really was his discussion with President Bush that convinced him that this bill had to go through, and it had to go through quickly and cleanly.
Remind us what those provisions were. The Democrats have been describing these as favors for friends of the Republican administration. Why were they so upset about the provisions, I guess seven provisions, that were tucked into this huge bill?
Well, six of them had to do with litigation and the kind of lawsuits that can be filed against companies that are involved, for example, in making vaccines or gas masks or anything arguably related to the war on terrorism. This bill gave those companies very sweeping protections against lawsuits, which has always been a hot-button issue between Democrats and Republicans.
So this will have impact that goes beyond Homeland Security, tightly defined.
Yes. Oh, yes. I think that's the other striking thing about this bill. There is so much in it. It was put together so quickly that very few people who voted on it actually had read the bill, had gone through it and had any idea what its implications would be. It's very much a work in progress. It'll probably take years to sort out what this actually means for the average American.
How can it be that it was put together so quickly? It seems as though it's been debated for a long, long time.
Well, yes, but remember the phases of this. For the first 4 or 5 months, President Bush insisted that he didn't need a new department. This was a Democratic idea. This was to have been Senator Lieberman's shot at the presidential election in 2004, to put it somewhat cynically, but it was really a Lieberman product. What's very striking is how gradually the president took this issue over, as it was clear that he really couldn't fight it. And in the end, Senator Lieberman was virtually left out of it. And I think if you asked most Americans watching television tonight, they would get the impression that this had been the president's idea all along and the Democrats had been fighting it.
But it started in Democratic hands.
That's right.
Gail, lay out for us, if you'd be good enough, The primary elements of this enormous bureaucratic reshuffle, we're told again and again it's the biggest restructuring in half a century or more. What are the major elements of this reconstruction of so much of the Washington bureaucracy?
Well, basically, you're going to take 21 agencies and combine them, either whole agencies or pieces of them, in a new super agency. The idea is to change the culture. Instead of Washington bureaucracies being ingrown, unwilling to share with each other, very competitive, it's to create a new culture around the idea of Homeland Defense, to share information more freely and to be focused, you know, like a laser on this problem.
And the major agencies that will be pulled into this new vortex?
For example, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms will disappear. INS disappears.
That's the Immigration Service.
Exactly. And I think another aspect that is really interesting, especially when you talk to civil libertarians, is how many little pieces are written into this bill that are going to change the culture of how citizens relate to their government. The kind of capacity that the bill allows for collecting information, both by government and by private corporations, and combining them and making them very readily accessible. Anyone who's ever had a difficulty with the Social Security, for example, and has been unable to solve it for months and months and months, can have some clue as to what this could mean if, for example, a mistake gets into these widely shared databases.
For example, if your name gets on a list of bad guys, how do you get it off?
Good example. Good example.
Well, how has it happened, Gail, that in the era when we are always hearing that small is better, that big bureaucracy is the problem, is the enemy, this has certainly been a long-time Republican chorus line, that it's come to be seen as a benefit to wrap all of these agencies, all of these tasks, up into one super agency?
Well, I think that is why the president resisted it for so long. Here's someone who came in with many Republicans in Congress on smaller is better. But, you know, there's one aspect to this I think is really worth watching. About the same time the last elements of this bill were being put together, the president was also pushing on other fronts, for example, to make it much easier for private contractors to bid for work with the federal government. And it's led, you know, some observers to suggest that he may be at the same time planning to really downsize other parts of the federal government and to privatize them. That might be part of the hidden motive in undermining the power of federal unions.
So, in a sense, the core of the government then gathers around the security task, and much of the rest gets farmed out to private contractors.
I would say that's worth keeping an eye on. I think there are a lot of hints this week that may be the direction we're going.
How will this actually unfold? Is there a big bang? Will it all happen over a week or a month or 6 months? How will these agencies be recombined?
Well, you know, the recombination you referred to at the beginning of the show, Department of Defense is still sorting out 50 years later. There are many people that think the same thing is going to happen here. It's going to take a very long time. Take another example. Some of the moderates who agreed at the very last minute to support the president's position on this bill did so because they had been given assurances by the House leadership that certain provisions would be taken out the first appropriations bill when the House gets back. Now, whether that promise is kept, I don't know, but even as they're voting on it, they're voting with the assumption that changes will be made. And I submit that assumption is going to last for years and maybe decades.
And where does this passage, and it hasn't happened yet, but we're anticipating it perhaps even within the hour?
That's right.
Where
it's a little later than that, but
well, we'll
I think
see.
You'll get it tonight.
Coming up soon, where does it shift power in Washington? Does it shift power to the executive? Does Congress feel empowered? Where does it go?
To the executive. Congress really, the whole debate over this issue was so narrow and so focused on just a couple of issues. You know, many people think, and I share that view, that Congress simply caved on it. They didn't give it the debate that it deserved. They didn't, you know, after the election, Democrats had already lost key senators over this issue. Mm-hmm. They could have fought longer, I think, to really make sure that people understood what it was and hold their ground for what they felt was worth holding.
But are you referring there primarily to federal employees' labor rights or to other issues, Gail?
Oh, I think labor rights were what the Democrats did focus on, but what they didn't focus on were issues like civil liberties on a whole other range of fronts. For example, the Freedom of Information Act is being very powerfully downgraded in terms of the information that businesses can now share with the federal government without any concern at all that that it will be uncovered through a Freedom of Information request. Almost no one discussed that, and yet it's one of probably thousands of little items that will affect the culture of this country. Another one, closed meeting laws. Remember all the fighting over the Department of Energy and Hillary Clinton's task force on health? Mm-hmm. That whole assumption that the public has a right to know on issues that relate to the public welfare, that has been set aside for whole aspects of how this law will function. And any federal employee, for example, that releases some of this information no longer under freedom of information is subject to criminal sanctions.
Gail, as the clock ticks down toward passage, it sounds like we're going to be sorting through the legacy of this lame duck Congress for a long, long time. I want to thank you for joining us tonight. It's been great to have you.
Happy to.
Gail Shattuck covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke to us from Capitol Hill. The terrorists are not going to wait, said Senator Trent Lott today. We need to get this done, and we need to do it now. And with that, the Senate Majority Leader in Waiting brushed aside Democratic charges of political favoritism and welcomed a vast government overhaul in the name of national security. Listeners, do you feel safer as Homeland Security gets the nod tonight? Is this huge bureaucratic reshuffle the answer? Is it a start? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me from Hanover, New Hampshire tonight is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Jack, you've heard there from Gail Shattuck and all over the news today how this mega Goliath of a piece of legislation is headed through this lame duck session. The Senate's imprimatur will be added to the House's, and with that, after a little negotiation, this will surely get President Bush's signature. And we say it once again, the biggest restructuring of the federal government in more than half a century.
Yes, and I think its management philosophy is synergy. You know, you throw all these units together, things like the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Nuclear Emergency Search Team, the National Pharmaceutical Stockpile. You blend them all together, and somehow their parts cohere into a new and more efficient whole. But that's going to take years. And, of course, as many people have pointed out, it does not deal with the issue of domestic intelligence. It does not force the CIA and the FBI to coordinate their knowledge. And so it really doesn't address the main problem we saw leading up to September 11th.
And for that matter, and here's where I'm still scratching my head, it doesn't include the FBI and the CIA. They're not part of the great new Department of Homeland Security.
No, and I don't understand that at all. And that from the beginning, I think, it made this whole thing seem much more like a political juggernaut than anything else. I mean, let's count the ways. The president signed on to it last spring amid news that his CIA and his FBI had not been talking prior to 9/11. Remember all those stories?
Sure.
He quickly came in on the side of this, and suddenly he was doing something about domestic security, and that went away. Well, then he also had an issue for the campaign. Two Democratic senators, Cleland and Carnahan, lost partly because they wouldn't go along with his version of this department. Then he was able, or his people in the House and Senate were able, to get campaign contributions from special interests who stuck the bill full of exemptions. Eli Lilly, for example, along with the National Rifle Association, and Philip Morris was the biggest contributor to the Republicans. There's something in there for them. And then, looking ahead, he's got the possibility to lay off all these federal workers. After all, we can't have more bureaucracy. And as Paul Krugman points out today, you can't collect political contributions from federal employees. That's against the law. But you can sure collect them from contractors who take over private services.
And yet, Jack, there was the cry across the land throughout 9/11 that we had to have better communication between agencies and across departments. Now we've got one giant one. We're going to dig into this tonight with a lot of people in Washington and beyond watching what's happening as the Senate goes into its final debate. The vote will come this evening for a new Department of Homeland Security. Listeners, join our conversation. It's passing tonight. Do you feel safer? And is shuffling the bureaucratic deck in Washington the answer? Is it a start? Has security triumphed over politics today, over special interests or not? You can join us 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight as the U.S. Senate goes into the home stretch for its final vote about the new Department of Homeland Security that is emerging. Almost two dozen federal agencies to be combined, 170,000 employees under one great big tent supposed to protect the United States. What do you think? It's passing tonight. Do you feel safer? And how will we measure the success of this new mega agency in a year, in 2 years, maybe in a decade? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined from Washington right now by NPR congressional correspondent David Wellner. Good evening and welcome, David. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
David, can you tell us what's happening on the floor of the Senate right now? I see on the television screen Senator Byrd is once again standing and talking. How near are we to a vote? Where does this stand in legislative process terms?
This is in the final throes of what's been a four-month-long debate in the Senate, and West Virginia Democrat Robert Byrd, as you mentioned, is in the midst of a stem winder, as he often is when he takes the floor.
A stem winder, but not a filibuster.
But not a filibuster. He had wanted to filibuster this, but his leader, Tom Daschle, said that he would vote to hold a vote on this, and so Byrd didn't get very far with that plan. But Byrd has, of course, been one of the chief critics of this reorganization of the federal government from the start. And he, as you know, is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, soon to be the ranking member when Republicans take over. And he was critical from the start about the idea of moving all this money into a new agency. And he said this evening that the people of this country are being offered a bureaucratic behemoth complete with top-heavy management. And he says that this is just a way to protect the president from criticism and fault should another terrorist attack occur.
Because he can say, I supported this great big new department. David Wellner, we're told that there is no doubt at this point that this will pass when it comes to a vote later this evening. Is that your read?
Yes, I think there's no doubt about that. There are many Democrats who will vote for this bill under protest, saying that it contains many provisions that they think are inappropriate to be in the bill and that the bill needs much more work. At the same time, they say that the president is insisting the country can't wait any longer to organize this department. It's going to take a good amount of time to get it going, even when this bill is approved and signed by the president. And for that reason, they're counting on his good faith to fix the things that even the White House recognizes now are wrong in the bill, and they say they're going to go along with expectation that these provisions will be taken out. There are three of them in particular that...
Those being?
Well, one of them was mentioned before. It pertains to a vaccine additive, a preservative that is made with mercury that...
This would exempt pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits if that had ill effects.
Yes, exactly. Now, this would be a retroactive the way it's written right now. Eli Lilly stopped using this a couple decades ago in the U.S., but these lawsuits come from many years back, and even Republicans were saying today it's inappropriate that this be retroactive. It shouldn't be prospective. Another one has to do with what seems to be a tailor-made description of a land-grant university that would carry on homeland security research, and that being Texas A&M University.
No mystery why they might have interest there. And in the bill as it stands now, this would become the legislatively defined National Center of Research on Homeland Security.
Exactly. And the other provision has to do with an amendment that was sponsored by the late Minnesota Democrat Paul Wellstone, which would have forbidden the federal government from doing contracts with U.S. companies that have relocated overseas for tax havens. And the provision that was stuck in this week in the House version, this past week in the House version, would have allowed federal contracts to be made with such companies if they're seen as pertaining to national security.
And all these are promised to come out.
Yeah. Well, Senate Minority Leader Trent Lott today said that when Congress reconvenes as the new 108th Congress in January, they will fix these problems. It's not clear exactly how they're going to do this, but
Right. What fix means could become an issue there.
Because actually, these will become law when they're signed by the president. And Senate Majority Leader Daschle today said that it's a lot harder to take something out of a bill once it's been signed into law than to stick something into it. And so they're going to have to find some other vehicle to take this material out. But I guess the word and the honor of Lott and also the White House and of Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert are riding on this. Hastert spoke from Istanbul today with some moderate Republicans who were about to go along with stripping the Homeland Security bill of these provisions, and said we will do something about this, and we'll back the efforts in the Senate to remove these. So
we heard Tom Daschle described, said Republicans should be ashamed of themselves for having the provisions in today. He's on the floor of the Senate right now talking. We're going to follow this vote as it comes to its conclusion this evening. David Wellnut, we've got a lot of people who want to join us this hour, but we thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for joining us with the update.
You're quite welcome.
We are talking tonight about Homeland Security, the new Department of Homeland Security, the mega agency that will be produced, in effect, out of a vote coming in the floor of the U.S. Senate tonight. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined now by Joseph McNamara. He's with us tonight from Stanford, California. He's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, generally a conservative research institution there. He was chief of police of San Jose, California for 15 years. Good evening and welcome, Joseph McNamara.
Thank you.
Mr. McNamara, you've been on the front lines of looking at law enforcement and what increasingly may be tied up with homeland security as well, the bigger issues that apply to terrorism. You have followed this with some care as it's gone through the U.S. Congress and now as it heads for a vote tonight. As a longtime law enforcement leader, how do you feel about this enormous new agency being formed in Washington? Does it make you feel more confident, less, something in between?
Well, one has to be concerned when you know it's a 485-page bill. I doubt if members of Congress have read it. I know I haven't read it. And we do know that there are some problems with approaches toward homeland security. Police chiefs who are very patriotic people are kind of quietly grumbling that the attorney general has put them on high alert, and yet they're not getting specific information from the FBI, from the federal government. They've labeled the local authorities as the first responders, which is a very big mistake in public policy because they're not just the first responders, they're the primary responders. It's not as if they take care of things for a few hours and then the federal government comes in and runs the show. Think of New York City. It was the local police, the local fire, the local
It wasn't the U.S. military swinging in there.
Well, I don't think we want the military being the primary agencies because then we become a different country. If we're in an all-out war that is threatening the nation's security, then, of course, it might become a military problem, but we won't have the kind of freedom that we enjoy today as Americans.
And Joseph McNamara, as a longtime law enforcement person, how do you understand the absence of the FBI from this package and the CIA? How does it work without these primary agencies under the same big tent?
It doesn't work. We rely on the CIA and FBI for intelligence, and the FBI is in a pitiful state. If you think of the sniper incident, the FBI established a hotline in which they were, the call takers were using forms in triplicate to record information and apparently hung up on the sniper four or five times. Now, a quarter of a century ago, my police department was using computer terminals to take calls, and the FBI is that far behind the curve in terms of computerization and technology, and it's something that needs to be included and needs to be addressed. We really need to upgrade the entire federal government's ability to analyze data and to computerize and to communicate with each other and with local authorities.
But presumably across at least the 21, 22 agencies coming under this great big new tent, that kind of cohesion, that kind of communication should be better. Isn't that the fundamental impulse here?
Well,
isn't that a positive thing?
It's always what they say, but in 1973, President Nixon formed the Drug Enforcement Administration to centralize the drug war, and all that's happened is we're spending $20 billion a year instead of $100 million a year. It did not coordinate things. It did not solve the drug problem. And, in fact, the communication between the DEA and the FBI and local authorities isn't what it should be.
Jack Beatty, I wonder tonight, as we look at the size of this new agency, if it's just the scale of things that can leave people feeling unsettled. Gail Shattuck said at the top of the hour, maybe the Pentagon and the U.S. military is the model we should look at, where during the World War II era, it was completely redesigned. It took it decades to grow into that redesign. Maybe what feels so unsettling tonight is just the sound of huge wheels turning in response to a new global situation.
Well, it's not just that. It's clearly more needs to be done to modernize the federal government. But to do it so hastily makes people uneasy. And I think there should be a provision in this bill that there's going to be a review. There's going to be a detailed planning and organizational process which brings in outside experts as well as government people, and that we just don't rush ahead and assume that we've taken care of everything.
Jack Beatty, it sounds though like we are going at high speed. We'll have it within minutes or hours, certainly, this great new agency.
Yes, and you know, as you say, Tom, it is passing strange that our first MBA president, that his main structural contribution to the government would be this bureaucratic behemoth, Senator Byrd is calling it. It just seems like sort of old think. And you know, you mentioned the 1947 redoing of the government. Well, that was all shaped to fight the Cold War, and that involved the founding of the CIA, which and the idea of the CIA was, you know, well, we saw before Pearl Harbor what the lack of intelligence on foreign governments wrought. We have to have an agency that's going to be at the spear. In other words, many of the reforms of 47 were directly tailored both to the prospective threat against the Soviet Union and to the retrospective failure around Pearl Harbor. I don't think you can say this about this bill.
Jack, Joseph McNamara, stand by. I'm looking at the TV now, and it looks as though the vote, it may be underway now, a roll call vote. As they do that, I want to welcome into our conversation Michael Weisskopf. He's senior correspondent for Time magazine, joining us from Washington, D.C. Good evening and welcome, Michael Weisskopf.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're well, thanks. Good. Michael, would you be good enough to walk us through the enormous four big quadrants of what's being created here tonight? A lot of reshuffling is going on. What we've got, border and transportation security, sucking up immigration and naturalization, customs, Coast Guard, a lot just in this first quadrant.
Yes, it's pretty extraordinary. Of course, the object, as stated a minute ago, was to streamline those activities, prevent redundancy, but more importantly, to ensure coordination and communication.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're trying to meld 170,000 employees and 22 agencies, by anyone's experience levels in Washington, suggests just the opposite. There could be all kinds of civil war going on. Anybody who's familiar with the Pentagon has seen the three branches go at each other.
The kind of turf wars there.
Yes, precisely. And they may even be more intense, and it will take a very, very strong department chief to keep everybody rowing in the same direction.
Well, and they're under the under just the one portion. We have the INS, Customs, Coast Guard. That's under Border and Transportation Security. Under the second group, Emergency Preparedness and Response, is FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and then a whole list of chemical, biological, domestic emergency. Again, everything being wrapped up, we've got another segment on what chemical, biological, and nuclear countermeasures.
Yeah. You know, we are always fighting the last war. And this is an outgrowth of the many disappointments and missed opportunities leading up to September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
11th, primarily the INS having difficulty with tracking people who passed our borders, but not informing in a timely fashion the CIA or the FBI, the latter able to capture them, until it was too late. And the object here is to bring more to bring it all under one tent. There are some subtle things that will be important. That is that there will be a much stronger analytical capability, drawing people in one room, essentially, to analyze intelligence.
Is this all part of, I guess, what's the fourth quadrant here, the information analysis and
precisely.
Infrastructure protection?
Yeah. That's the key piece of it, because the most maddening thing in the pre-9/11 period were all these disparate strands that never connected to one another.
So now they're pulling together strands from the Energy Department.
Mm-hmm. Had they connected, even if the FBI and the Justice Department were going in the same direction, had they, you could make a strong case that 9/11 would have been stopped or at least postponed long enough for us to figure out what was going on. And so there is that, and it's really, as I said, up to somebody extraordinarily powerful to draw these folks together.
But once the legislation is passed, and that could be happening in any minute now, sooner or later they have to be rolled together, don't they? It will be the legal mandate.
Oh, I believe this goes back to the House for a conference committee. There are a few technical changes.
Mm-hmm.
Once it gets into one of these conference committees, anything can happen, including losing it all together. So this is the legislative process grinds, and it in mysterious ways as well. The most mysterious of which is in these conference committees. So we don't know what the outcome is going to be. There were many members of Congress, particularly those who switch over from the Democratic side, who simply voted for this because of Bush's long arm in the last election and the punishment of senators who had not supported his bill.
We heard Senator Christopher Dodd today saying something along the lines of, if this bill had been named anything but Homeland Security, it never would pass.
Yeah.
There's a spirit. Joseph McNamara, I know we've got to lose you in just a minute, but as you imagine, local law enforcement officers looking forward to tapping into this new agency, does it require them to reorient toward an entirely new pole in Washington, or will it be a long step-by-step process dealing through familiar agencies until new orders come down?
I think there'll be a transition. Clearly something had to be done. I do think there's going to have to be recognition that our primary forces to deal with any act of domestic terrorism will be local emergency services and health services and local government. And I don't really see any clear indication of how that's going to be funded, how that's going to be worked into this plan. And I guess we just have to hope that everyone will work in good faith and that it won't be turf battles and that there'll be a real attempt to coordinate in the interest of national security.
Well, Lord knows we need it. Joseph McNamara, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Joseph McNamara is a research fellow at the Hoover Institution and was chief of police in San Jose, California for 15 years. Listeners, were talking about the new Department of Homeland Security. The vote is going on in the Senate. As we speak, you can join the conversation. What does it mean that the biggest U.S. government restructuring in 50 years is driven by national security issues? Join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the new Department of Homeland Security. The vote is going on in the U.S. Senate right now that, after some tinkering with the House of Representatives, will lead to legislation that President Bush has vowed to sign, has pushed hard to sign during this lame duck session. What do you think? It's passing tonight. Do you feel safer? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by On Point News analyst Jack Beattie and by senior correspondent for Time Magazine talking to us tonight from Washington, Michael Weisskopf. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. Patrick is on the line. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you?
Good, thanks.
You know, I think the correct way to look at this is that, you know, in terms of do I feel safer right away? No, I don't. Mm-hmm. But I would like to think that in the future, as time progresses, that I will.
So you're feeling confident that this is going to pull the threads together in such a way that Americans end up safer?
Well, we're devoting a tremendous amount of resources into this as one of your
38 billion dollar budget.
Right, yep. Right. So it's a behemoth, and I think that with that much money at stake, then there'll be an awful lot of eyes watching mm-hmm. to make sure that money is being used correctly, and that I think over time the mistakes or the drawbacks in the current or in the new system will be honed.
So you're ready to go with it? I take it you're glad they're acting.
I don't think we have any choice. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, there was such a groundswell to do something.
Yes, there was.
Now that you're going to do it, it's, you know, I think we're really kind of forced just to hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Patrick, thanks for your call. Michael Weisskopf, how about it? What's the word around Washington? Is there this feeling that something had to be done, this is the best we could do, and it was time to act? Or is there real widespread concern that this is too much too fast?
Strangely, Tom, this is an issue that is almost passé. It was very hot at the time of the, in proximity to the events of 2001. But it began to atrophy as we approached the election, a few months before the election. Everyone thought it would go away.
They thought the entire bill would go away.
Yeah, and right now, this was about the time when the Democrats began to object to the labor provisions of mm-hmm. it. It looked like it was too complicated. People are tuned out and were no longer interested. Now the most intriguing thing in Washington is the special interest side of this all, the fact that the Republicans have looked for openings to take care of friends in business and other places.
It seems so Washingtonian. I mean, the whole government's being restructured around Homeland Security, and it's passé. We're going to be living with this for a long time, and what we've heard tonight is a whole list of concerns around civil liberties, Freedom of Information Act, closed meeting laws, in addition to the fundamental issues of coordinating security. As a citizen, it seems like a big deal.
As as citizens, this is not a citizen agency, and it an agency that will affect people only as you measure their comfort levels over the years. Somewhat like the CIA, people don't think much about what the CIA does. But whenever there's a CIA spy caught, then it gets attention from the public. This is not an agency that's going to have much impact on people's daily lives in the United States. It has more impact, presumably, on foreign people who are trying to enter the country. Or enter the country through, with illicit motives in mind.
Yeah, maybe, though. We wonder, as all the intelligence gets wrapped up together, you want it wrapped up and effective. On the other hand, you don't want it to be intrusive. Let's turn to our callers. Tony's calling from Winchester, Massachusetts. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Yeah, Tom, thank you. Well, I'd like to dispute some of the characterizations about special interest legislation.
Go for it.
Number one, the talk about pharmacy companies contributing big money. Well, the Trial Lawyers Association happens to be the biggest contributor to the Democrat Party in the.
So Republicans aren't the only ones who have friend
exactly.
in business.
And there's a legitimate reason. There are only four companies left that produce vaccines in this country. There used to be over 20 companies that did that. Why? Because frankly, lawsuits over legitimate risks. There are risks associated with vaccines. You can't get away from that. But there's a greater good to protect the population from deadly diseases. We have to have some risk. But if companies are going to be driven out of business by lawyers suing them, there has to be some protection for it.
And Tony, what about companies that are relocate offshore so they can avoid taxes? Are you happy seeing them potentially exempted under this bill?
That's because of our tax laws make American companies uncompetitive because of the absurd punitive taxation. We have very difficult taxation. The reason for those companies are leaving, frankly, is to be so that they can be competitive. And the better answer would be to change our tax laws so that we are not so punitive that we force people out of the country.
Okay, and the closed meeting laws here, Tony, the closed meeting laws that will allow the government to talk with private industry about all kinds of things and the public never to know what goes on, are you happy with that, too? Is there anything that bothers you here?
The details of all of that. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, talking about this big department that you talk about, but being a great behemoth. There's already a behemoth in Washington. All of this does is combine into one agency. Frankly, I think it's window dressing. It doesn't put any new money into the government. It just combines existing agencies that already are there. And talk about the labor union business. What the Democrats were trying to do was to change the existing law. Under existing law, the president has the right for national security reasons to exempt certain employees involved in national security matters from the collective bargaining process.
And now he's got a lot more authority for a long time. Tony, thanks for your call. Jack Beattie, I want to turn to you here. Tony says, come on, get over it. These are reasonable. These aren't just favors. Everybody's got friends in industry. We need to do this for the security of the country.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the trial lawyers are the Democrats' big givers, and they were in the last campaign. And this is a strategic. This Eli Lilly provision is a strike at the Democrats' base, as is the strike at the federal employees. So this is good politics. Whether it's good public policy or not, I don't know. I mean, when I read in the New York Times, for example, its principal beneficiary would be the pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly, which developed thimerosal. This is this particular element in a vaccine that is believed by some to linked to autism in children. When I read that they're going to be exempted from suits about that, I don't somehow take a lot of comfort from that. That seems to me like a failure of government.
Even the greater good argument that Tony makes?
I don't see a greater good if I have a child with autism. I'm sorry.
But not mumps, rubella, you know, and the rest? I mean, I don't know. It's a complicated picture. I see here that there's other things going on here, though. The very explicit movement, and Michael Weisskopf, fill us in if you can, to allow government to talk to private industry along the lines of Dick Cheney's much debated meetings with energy companies that will be sanctioned under this new bill. The sunlight will not get into these meetings. That sounds like something that's right in line with Dick Cheney's view of how the executive ought to be able to work.
Precisely. If he could only extend this to the other dozen or so agencies of government, I think he'd be quite happy. That's right. It is just closed meetings and a lack of public accountability. You know, this also extends to the CIA, so it's no big surprise. The only difference is that now agencies which had some accountability and were forced by freedom of information laws to provide information, mm-hmm. Will now have a large shield.
And that's troubling.
It's very troubling. Also, I mean, to the extent that also that we are seeing how, in the name of national security, some of our civil liberties are being compromised or limited or trampled upon, depending on who you speak to. The fact that organizations like this Homeland Security are not publicly accountable makes it all the more risky.
Chris is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. I was worried about what happens when they get you on the wrong list. You get on the government's S list, or I guess terrorist list.
Suspect list. Mm-hmm.
But I get a lot of junk mail now, which is pretty harmless from marketing companies. It's my understanding they're going to be using every bit of your personal private information, and that's their goal anyways, in this vast new computer database to weed out supposed terrorists or God knows whoever else they want to weed out, maybe people that just happen to have a different political bent or people that don't like the idea of this department apparently being a de facto department of marrying industry's information on individuals and government's information on individuals. It's like the industry's being given an office and citizens are being locked out.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it. The other would be that the legislation is letting the government use every tool at its disposal to guard the homeland against attack. But Michael Weisskopf, here's exactly where we're left with 400 and some pages and not knowing exactly how all this will spin out when it's actually put into effect.
That's true, and it may take many years till it's all put into effect. The fact that each one of these agencies is its own, at this point, independent fiefdom, they will hold on to their prerogatives with life and death struggle. How the money is carved up, again, will take an extremely powerful manager on the level of an Iacocca to be able to pull this off. So I would guess that a year from now there'll be stories about how these warring fiefdoms are still at each other's throats, and the functions that they once performed are no longer operating.
Chris, thanks for your call. Michael, what do we know about what the leadership of this new agency is likely to look like?
Well, you hear of the interest in Tom Ridge, who is now serves that function in the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a friend of the president's and was the governor of Pennsylvania. He's considered to be a good manager. But thus far in his job at sort of at the NSC level, he hasn't exhibited much influence. He doesn't have a budget, doesn't really have any manpower behind him. He's not been a particularly articulate spokesman, and he's it's questionable whether he still has the same confidence in the president.
The Senate is voting right now. So far, there's strong Democratic support, which would suggest that we will see passage and probably passage by a pretty good margin. Chris is calling. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about basically this passing of a kind of broken bill. I agree with a lot with the previous Chris from Framingham's concerns, especially as they regard to, freedom of information laws. We know that in the 60s, one of the favorite targets of spying by the FBI was Martin Luther King and other peaceful protest movements. And as you mentioned, you could get on the wrong list or just be a political enemy, and this seemed like a real easy way to, strong-arm people.
And yet, Chris, we all saw those towers come down on 9/11, and surely everybody thought in the days and weeks following that, we've got to do something here. Does this approximate what you would like to see the government doing, or what would you suggest?
Well, I think the solutions to terrorism are much more complicated, mm-hmm. and the approach would be not to point guns at people's heads that kind of don't care anymore and feel desperate. But rather to try to get some prosperity and make more friends around the world, basically. But I had a quick question, which
yes.
is, this bill seems so flawed, and your guests have said that the Democrats who are voting for it now keep stressing that they're sort of holding their nose and they expect a good faith effort later
to fix it up, right?
To come back to it. What is wrong with asking the Republicans for a good faith effort now to fix the bill before it's passed?
Well, looking at the tally growing, I guess it's a little late, but let's consider it anyway. Chris, thanks for your call. Michael Weisskopf, our time is running down, but was there any option, given the strong push from the White House and the Republican win in the midterm elections, did it make this inevitable?
Well, the option would have been to knock out seven provisions the Democrats were hoping to delete, involving special interests, and it involves more than an industry. It involves Texas A&M, for instance, as a favored university among top Republicans, and it will get tremendous funding under this bill to set up a kind of sort of counterterrorism center. The alternative would have been more deliberation, which probably would have killed it. There's no question about that. Maybe it should have been killed.
But the president wanted it, and he wanted it now in the lame duck session. It's headed for victory right now. Michael Weisskopf, our hour is up. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael Weisskopf is senior correspondent for Time Magazine. Jack Beatty, we see the tally going. It looks like this is passing. This will be legislation.
A big victory for the president.
He's got it. He's got it tonight. Jack, thanks for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners.